Oh, no, no, no. There's nothing wrong with your calendar. There's nothing wrong with your timeline. There's nothing wrong in your world. Granted, Wizards Tuesday, Wizards Thursday. I promise you, next week we're going back to Mondays. There's nothing to worry about. It's a special edition of the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast where we are talking with MMA legend, wrestling legend, Josh Barnett, and he'll be joining us shortly. But it is myself, Double T.
Brundo.
KJG.
And me and Kevin did one of these a little while ago with Matt Taven as soon as he jumped to Impact.
I was on my lunch break, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been a while since we've done one of these, but...
I remember you did one with Robbie X, too.
You are correct, Robbie. Yeah. That was a hell of a day for me.
Anything 4 years ago in the Wizards, I could pretty much remember.
You're better at it than the two of us, I'll tell you that right now. But yeah, I reached out to Josh late Monday night to see if he wanted to join us on Tuesday because we didn't have a guest, and he didn't get back to me till yesterday morning, but it just kind of worked out where we got him for tonight. So he should be joining us any minute now. He's calling us from the West Coast, and we're going to talk about Bloodsport, and we're going to talk about dude, look at Brundon's picture's frozen. He looks like,
oh my god. Oh, he's still here though.
Yeah,
can you guys still hear me?
We can hear you, but your picture is frozen. You look like
something out of a Batman movie.
Looks like
all right, I'm gonna have to come back in.
He looked like a Buddha.
Yeah, I was gonna say, didn't Danny DeVito play Penguin and like Penguin Batman Returns and like
Batman Returns, best Batman ever?
Yeah, that was you right there. And you were frozen, so it makes sense. You old Penguin.
Yeah. All right. Well, Brundo will be right back. Josh Barnett joining us shortly. We're gonna talk about December 14th, Highest in the Room 3, where he's taking on Royce Isaacs. He's also has the GCW Bloodsport open challenge at the Hammerstein Ballroom, the People vs. GCW on January 19th. So we'll talk about that and lots of more. Josh Barnett has a storied history, not just in MMA, but in professional wrestling too. So there's a lot of meat on the bone here, and we'll see how much we can get with Mr. Barnett.
Did a lot of Inoki stuff, New Japan stuff, all that.
Fantastic. The New Japan stuff is fucking wild to me.
Yeah. The Inoki stuff, the IGF. Some of his opponents is like insane.
Well, like even like for me, who's not like as in depth as you guys are clearly, but like, I was like, Josh Barnett, that name sounds familiar. MMA, right? Duh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like in the pro wrestling scope, it was that he was doing like commentary for like New Japan.
He was. Do you also recall when he challenged,
I do. Who are you going to say?
Bobby Lashley.
Yeah. Yeah. Bobby Lashley, open challenge.
Yeah. So there's a lot there with Josh Barnett. And he just recently worked Wrestle Dream last year. He did in the 0 hour, he wrestled Claudio.
And he said afterwards that he'd welcome a rematch.
Oh, and I was thinking of that recently. I was trying to think who I'd want to see him fight in Bloodsport, and Claudio came to mind.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure we'll get to all that with this man.
Yeah. Don't want to shoot the load too early.
Didn't Santana do Bloodsport a little while ago?
He did. Not this past one. I wish. He fought Homicide in the Bloodsport 11.
That's where Josh Barnett wrestled, fought Bad Dude Tito.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Santana?
That was it.
Yeah.
Bad Dude Tito Santana versus...
Mike Santana.
Tito Santana. Yeah, Mike
Santana. And with Tito Santana as the special referee. Imagine that. Just booked it right here. You listening, booked Brett?
Right.
All right. So now we're just. Jesus God Almighty. Do not.
901. Please, it's 901.
No, I mean the comments. Don't. Please. Don't. Leave rock and roll.
This isn't Monday night. This isn't Tuesday night. This is a special edition here. We're not getting into any of that nonsense here. It's not the place for it. It's not the time for it.
Leave rock and roll buff in his place. Yeah.
Probably
it's in the mail, Buck.
Yeah.
Probably checks in the mail.
Yeah. If you send him a shirt, should it have a chisel in it?
A chisel?
Yes. Yeah. No. Don't. Please don't. Dear God. Dear God, don't.
You might want an ice pick the way you were frozen before.
Here's something. While we wait for him, do you guys know who his first tag team partner in New Japan was, Josh Barnett?
I mean, I think I did this in the research, but I already forgot.
Was it Yuji?
No.
No, he fought Yuji Nagata.
Imayori? No.
No.
Hold on. I know this guy.
Oh, you know, don't cheat. Don't cheat, KJG.
Oh, wasn't no. Bob Sapp, was it?
It was not Bob Sapp. He is an American professional wrestler. He used to work in ECW. He was part of a tag team.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Doug Perry Saturn.
Oh, Perry Saturn. Oh, I did know that. Yeah. I did know that. I did know that.
Yeah. All right. And speak of the devil, our guest is here, so I'm going to bring him in if he's ready.
Oh, he looks ready.
The War Master, Josh Barnett. Mr. Barnett, how are you tonight?
Pretty good. How about yourselves?
Great. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us to talk GCW, Highest in the Room 3, Bloodsport, and all things related to Josh Barnett. Highest in the Room 3, December 14th, you and Royce Isaacs. I know he's done a lot of Bloodsport with you guys, but how do you feel going into this match against him in a regular wrestling environment?
Well, I believe it's going to be a Bloodsport match. So,
fantastic.
More of the same. He's been on quite the winning streak himself. But in this sense, I guess it's a little bit of a battle of LA. But, you know, I kind of look at it as, you know, the young whippersnapper is feeling pretty spry and he likes his chances at this point, which I don't blame him. And I'm more than happy to meet the challenge. But then I guess that puts a little extra onus on me. I need to put a little punctuation mark on this win.
In general, when it comes to MMA or professional wrestling, like you say, like, oh, I got Royce Isaacs on December 14th. How much work, how much digging, if you don't necessarily know a lot about the opponent, again, MMA or pro wrestling, how much do you actually do before getting into a match or a fight?
Well, with Isaac, I don't need to really do much research at all. You know, I've seen pretty much all of his matches. I've trained him from time to time. So easy peasy as far as the understanding of at least why he does what he does and where his strengths and weaknesses are. Although, you know, it's not the same as actually going out there and executing it. That's going to have to happen coming up here December 14th. But for MMA, usually I'll spend 15 minutes looking over a guy. Because most of the guys at the time I was fighting, I already knew who was who my potential opponents would be. And essentially I could figure out what their game was really quickly. And then it was just a matter of, okay, well, be aware of that and keep on the lookout for that. Keep him working in this capacity other than that. And, you know, mostly do what I want to do to that guy, you know, make him be the reactive combatant. Whereas I'm the person, you know, driving the whole fight home and dictating from start to finish. It's a lot easier, let me tell you that way. But if it was a complete unknown, then maybe I'd spend an hour doing some look on him. But most of the time, I've just been around the game so long, I can just take a look like, all right, that's his deal.
Nice.
Do you have like a dream opponent you'd like to fight in Bloodsport? Because some of your opponents have been actually all of them have been fantastic, like MVP, Johnny Nitro, all those guys. Do you have somebody you'd love to see come up, answer your challenge?
Well, I mean, in a dream matchup, it would be impossible because Alexander Karelin is retired, Volkan's retired, Akira Maeda is retired. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
I think there's still plenty that could happen out there. You know, I for one would love to, get some time in combat against someone like Kushida. You know, even though he's quite a bit smaller than me, he's a very decorated and talented wrestler and shoot wrestler. So it'd be interesting from my perspective. I'd like to see what it'd be like trying to deal with somebody that quick. Although, you know, Johnny Nitro, no slow man himself. You know, sky's the limit, you know, but who's likely to show up? I don't know. You know what I mean? I mean, that challenge is out there. We're searching high and low. I'd still like to have another tangle with Claudio, if at all possible.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. We were talking about that before you joined us, actually.
Yeah. No, it's funny because, you know, you wrestle a guy once on a card, on a show that really isn't about you, geared towards you. It doesn't really, you know, it's not a place that I work. So it's always surprising how many people have seen that match and they're like, okay, there's something about this that's different and I want to see more of it. And I think some of it may even be how Claudio approached the match from those seeing him all the time in AEW and in WWE. And then they see him in the ring with me. It's like, whoa, not the same that I'm used to. And in fact, his demeanor and everything's a bit different. I like to try and bring out different facets of people. And hopefully I would hope that that'd be the best out of them, you know?
Absolutely. And you talk about not the same as you're used to. A lot of us who are big UFC fans back in the day saw you be very successful, youngest UFC heavyweight champion. But then you make the transition into pro wrestling. You do both. But how do you end up in New Japan in 2003? And how is your first match for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship against Yuji Nagata? You went from UFC, Pancrase, and Pride into New Japan, and that's just such an interesting path that you took.
Well, I mean, it was UFC, New Japan, and then from New Japan, it was Pancrase and Pride and K1 and Sengoku and everything on else. But I'd say the short answer is Antonio Inoki is why all that happened. But the more granular element is that I saw Tsuyoshi Kosaka, who was a training partner of mine and friend, competing in New Japan. And I was just blown away. So like, whoa. So I start writing him an email immediately going like, bro, what? How the hell did you get in here? How is this possible? You know, let him know I want to go. I want to come to New Japan. I want to wrestle over there if at all possible. So he pushed the word along. New Japan's office contacted me. I was down in Santa Monica at the Noki Dojo meeting with them, and away we went. Contract signed. You're wrestling Yuji Nagata. Oh, okay. Holy crap. And then, we just go from there.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty wild. I love looking at old statistics and old matches that, you know, you go from Yuji Nagata and then they pair you with Perry Saturn, which must have been a wild experience for you.
I'm a big fan of Perry Saturn and the Eliminators when I met up with them. And I had followed his career from ECW to WCW and then eventually to WWE, the whole mop thing. Or no, not mop. Yeah, the mop thing.
Yeah, Moppy. Yeah.
And I mean, that shows you how good of a worker he is. He was punished with this stupid gimmick, and he got it over. You know, and that is a mark of a real great worker. But Perry, I was really excited to work with Perry. I thought that there was a lot I could learn from him. That, you know, I was proven right. And you know, you go from wrestling Yuji Nagata for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship in your first match in the Tokyo Dome in front of like 50,000 people. And then you go home for maybe a few weeks and you're brought back for your first tour. And your first match is a tag team, you and Perry Saturn versus Masahiro Chono and Hiroyoshi Tenzan. Well, all right, man. And I can tell you, like, those Yakuza kicks I took had some heat. I remember one of them, it wasn't the impact of just getting kicked was so bad. It was that the heel of Chono's boot, like, just stuck me right in the top of my chest. Oh, brutal. I had this weird circular bruise my upper chest for I don't know how long. And then let me tell you, trying to get to the ropes when someone's locked an STF on you is a real chore. Holy crap.
Now, you said that Inoki pretty much made this whole run for you possible, and your story and your journey. Was starting in the States and going anywhere in the States ever on the table for you?
Honestly, no. I never even considered it when the thought or even the path of pro wrestling became available to me. I had zero interest in doing anything with anyone in the States. I wasn't really into it. I was really more of a Japanese pro wrestling fan, and I saw that this was a place where I could go and I could live out being an MMA fighter and a pro wrestler all at the same time. If I was to attempt something like that in the United States, if it was WWE, well, that would be a non-starter. You know, they had a very specific approach. I wasn't really into what they were doing wrestling wise at that time. Plus, I didn't feel like it really fit me anyways. I didn't feel like I would be a good fit for them. So I just didn't even see it as a consideration. Also, fighting would have been completely off the table. That would have been over with, which I wasn't ready to do. Then, you know, the Indies was not something I was really considering, not to mention, you know, I just was probably someone that wouldn't have been on their radar, not to mention maybe really expensive for small shows to have brought me in, especially because I was only concerned with fighting and New Japan. That was pretty much it. So outside of that, I just didn't really have any desire or interest.
Did getting thrown into the deep end, which they did to you in New Japan, prior to your excursion over there, did you reach out to a few of the former MMA fighters who had had a chance to work New Japan? Bass Rutten, Mark Coleman, I know Kevin Randleman did some All Japan stuff. Did you reach out to those guys and ask for any advice?
No, I just went over there. I mean, I was friends with Coleman and Randleman, and so we would, you know, come across each other's presence all the time. How I cornered Mark Coleman before, and then eventually Randleman and Coleman and myself would be on the same shows with IGF stuff. With Boss, I saw it. It was cool. But I just was, I mean, for me, it was like cross the bridge when you get there. It was the same with MMA. In 1993, when I saw UFC 2 or 94, it was just like, well, I don't know how I'm going to get into this, but I'm going to figure it out. And I just did. And just kept putting one foot in front of the other until that foot ended up hitting someone in the face in a cage. And it was just like that. There wasn't really a path. And with pro wrestling, you know, I felt like I was in good hands. They don't want me to fail. And I just trained every day on the road. You know, I took that match against Nagata, and truthfully, I only really trained, if you could call it that, pro wrestling for 2 days at best. I just had watched pro wrestling a lot, played the video games, like played a ton of WCW versus the World on the PlayStation, Fire Pro, all that kind of
Oh,
stuff.
yeah.
But so, you know, and I watched tons and tons and tons of tapes and tape traded and all that. But really, what it was is I just loved it, and I felt like I knew it, and what I didn't know, I would learn, and I was okay with that. What people wanted to see was me, and they wanted to see fight stuff. So anything I brought to them that was unexpected, like hitting captured suplexes and stuff like that, it was like, whoa, okay, yeah, it's all cherry on top. But as soon as I would have started hitting the ropes and trying to throw drop kicks and clotheslines, people would have been like, whatever, because that's not what they would have wanted to have seen from me anyways. I would have become just like everybody else. It's like Anton Chigurh says, you know, that's your lucky coin, but don't put it in your pocket with all the other change, because then it'll become just like you'll lose it, and it'll become just like the others, just a coin, which it is. So I needed to make sure that I stayed who I was, because that's what they wanted to see and were interested in the first place. And then, like I said, every day I trained on the road. If it wasn't just me teaching submission wrestling stuff to people in New Japan, like running the whole class and teaching submission wrestling, or Nagata running us through squats and sprints and all that, and then always having time to get in the ring working with Liger a whole bunch. But you know, I traded catch wrestling with Liger for learning how to sell, and guys like Chono would see me doing stuff like trying to run the ropes, and they come in and teach me. And then I'd learn. And then Christopher Daniels and Mike Barton and guys like that were on the road with us. They work with me on stuff. Like everybody, and I tell this to people that I work with, like, don't be afraid to go up and ask somebody something. Like a lot of times people might be on a car with Minoru Suzuki, and I say, if you're one of my guys, go up and talk to him. Go ask him to teach you techniques. You know, be polite and respectful, and it's going to hurt like hell, but trust me, you know, he is willing to help those that have a good attitude and that really want to know. And for me, that was just the same. I just approached everyone, whatever it is that you think I could do better, or I've seen you do this, can you teach me that? And I would work with them and learn and carry it on.
Clearly anyone who knows your wrestling career is listening to this. You knows you're such a fan. You mentioned tape trading to get to share the ring with Jushin Thunder Liger in 2004. Was there a moment where you kind of took a step back from being Josh Barnett, the wrestler, and you just sort of like, man, I am in the ring with Jushin Thunder Liger. This is fucking awesome.
From day one, like every time I'd end up in the ring, I'm like, how the fuck did I get here? I mean, and I'll be honest, that shit still crosses my mind at times, because regardless of whatever I may have done or what was perceived as to why I should be with anyone or given any benefit or special privilege, I just always think back, like, I know what I've done to get here and I know what work I've put in, but that's no reason to think that any of these things are a given or that I deserve them. You know, they you have to be fortunate enough to be the person that is able to have these opportunities, and then when they come, make those people feel correct in you being given them. And I know a lot of people like to say, you know, things about their humility, and maybe it sounds trite because it is perhaps to the point that it seems like a cliche, but I really do believe that. And I always try to strive in life to be a white belt as many times as possible, because there's so much that I have still yet to know. And even that which I consider myself to already be a master of, I can't know it all. There has to be something. There is always maybe a way, a small or great way, at which I can make whatever I do even better yet, or more adaptable, you know, whatever.
I got to ask, because every guy that we've ever had on the show that goes to Japan, Lance Archer swears by the raw horse meat. Are you a fan of the raw horse meat?
Okay. So Jim Steele had me all like super work, like nervous about trying the horse meat, raw horse meat, basashi. And he's like, that's, you know, I've eaten everything they put in front of me, but man, that was the stuff that made me sick. And, you know, so I was pretty trepidatious about that. So for a while, but then eventually I just had to give it a try. And I've had it in various occasions. I've had it where it's been pretty damn good. I've had it where it's like, it's okay. But, you know, when I think back on like sponsor dinners being taken out at night, and they would put the wildest shit in front of me just to see if this guy's just going to eat it. And of course I ate everything that they put in front of me, much to like, you know, like people just being shocked and like, you know, big intake of air, like all this kind of stuff, man. It's like, they didn't think I was going to put the raw fish guts and chili paste in my mouth, but I did, you know. Or like me and, well, his name's Eric. And he was Apocalypse in Calgary. And then he was part of that, I always want to call him APA, but that's not who they were. The Ascension. I don't know what name he was working for the Ascension. Eric something, I think. But anyways. Eric
is Big Con or Connor? Connor?
Victor. Maybe. Victor?
The big dude or the smaller dude?
Well, how big is the big dude? I don't know.
Maybe the big dude.
Well,
big
Eric. Eric's probably 6'2". So he's not small. He's probably like 220. Yeah, maybe he was Victor.
It's got to be Victor.
Black, yeah, it was,
yeah. So he and I went out, we're taken out to eat with Tenzon, and we're at this Korean barbecue spot. Actually, I think it was yakiniku, you know, Japan, but they had a lot of Korean dishes on it too. And one of his favorites is this raw octopus sashimi. Excuse me. But what they do is they whack the tentacles off while the thing's still alive. So when they come out on the plate, it's a royal rumble out there. And I'm not kidding you, man. You got to fight these things to get them off the plate. So both me and Eric are just practically green looking at this thing. I'm like, oh my God, this is really takes the cake. And Tenzon's just chomping away and dipping them in this salt paste. And like, oh, it's good. I'm like, oh, God, I don't know about that. But of course, we're there. So we go and we dip in with our chopsticks. And I remember getting a hold of one of these wriggly sons of bitches. And I'm trying to pull it off the plate. Well, it's suckered to the plate. So I had to slide it across the plate until it got to the edge. And now it came off. And now it's, you know, it's doing the dance on my chopsticks. I put it in my mouth, and the first thing it does is suckers the inside of my mouth, and I just started chewing on it like I was trying to, I don't know, like I was trying to get out of Saw in one of those Saw movies. And whatever the case may be, it was a bad deal, and I just was like, one's enough. One's enough.
It makes for a great story, but it doesn't, I would never.
It's, you know what, I would tell you to eat basashi all day. I'm not going to tell you to eat that.
So you mentioned earlier, I believe, referring to Kushida about like sneaky tough shoot wrestler type guy. Is there anyone else out there like that that you would want to work with that maybe the fan base doesn't necessarily know who's as tough as they may appear on TV?
That's a good question.
I mean, all wrestlers are tough, right? But like shoot,
well, yeah,
like,
you're right. With that have like legit shoot backgrounds and that's interesting. You know, I mean, Naito actually was, I believe he did some submission wrestling back in the day as well. He has a record. You know, I mean, it'd be interesting to try and pull maybe some of Akiyama's old freestyle wrestling past into the ring with him, but. I don't know. You know, that's a good question. And to be honest, that's something I like to try and do with Bloodsport is bringing people like Santino Marella, and people see him and they're like, oh, whoa, what now? He's wrestling Sakuraba or Simon Gotch and holy shit, there's no socks. There's no, or there's none of that stuff. Like there's zero comedy, man. This guy is like, he's serious business and he's incredibly skilled. I love seeing stuff like that, or getting John Morrison to go out there and drop down and hit a double on somebody and be like, oh, he could do that? Like, yeah, actually, he's really good at it.
And what makes GCW so special, the place that you want to keep having these moments happen?
I would say because they're just all about it. You know, they're a machine that just keeps grinding forward day after day, weekend after weekend, and Brett has carved out really his spot in the top of the indies by just tirelessly working constantly and putting together insane stuff to more traditional pro wrestling and everything in between. And they support what I do, you know, fully. While, you know, Bloodsport's its own thing, it's part of that GCW family, and, you know, we're all in on it. I that's why I'm on these GCW cards coming up. I'm going to wrestle in the Hammerstein Ballroom because I think it's a good place for me to go out there and to show what I have to show, regardless of whether it be Bloodsport or not.
Coming from somebody who'll be at the Hammerstein, I'm super excited to see you there. So very excited to see who your opponent awesome. Is.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. I noticed one guy that you wrestled at when you were in IGF that I'm just fascinated with over in Japan. What was it like wrestling with Bob Sapp, and like how over was he like while he was over there?
Well, I was his coach when he hit his peak with the MMA and kickboxing stuff, and yeah, it was massive. And he was a real force in nature. And the thing about Bob is So I even used to do stuff like, because he didn't have the understanding or knowledge base of Japanese culture and pop culture like I did. So I'd feed him stuff all the time that I thought would be good for him to use for cutting promos and doing this and doing that. But the thing is, like, it's not like, oh, you have to like handhold this guy. No, Bob is the type of person that if you give him that information, boom, he will turn it into a great promo, a moment. He'll put it in there, you know, like me teaching him about who King Ghidorah is and from Godzilla and how he's a monster with three heads. Well, you're going to be a three-headed monster. You're going to be pro wrestling, MMA, and kickboxing. And so he used that out there, and they're like, oh, you know about it. And the thing is, you know, he's speaking to them about in ways that they understand, but also surprising them with, you know, little mentions and things that would just completely take them by surprise, you know, blow them away. And you know, Bob, it was just great at it. You know, such personality, such charisma. Wrestling him, super easy. I say that, you know, if you don't get underneath the 400-pound man, it's a much better night.
Did you have it? Did you Sap Time is one of my favorite music videos ever.
I own a copy of that CD.
And did you give him any input on that when he went to film
No,
Bob?
that was all Bob. That's all Bob just being a character.
So we're what are we, 12 blood sports in now?
12 and one international.
Yeah, the Bushido with you and Moxley, right? That's fantastic. Do you have a particular favorite bout as a fan that over the course of those 12 blood sports?
Well, I'm initially for this, I'm disqualifying myself completely, but wow, okay. A favorite. Well, I really liked Charlie Dempsey versus Matt Mikowski. I thought that was pretty fantastic. If you watch Marina Shafir versus Zeta Zhang, there are parts where it looks like live fire are happening in that match, which is pretty awesome. Not to mention Marina versus Masha is a great match. I think Shayna versus Mia versus Masha was incredibly impactful, really incredibly violent. Santino versus or Anthony Morella versus Sakuraba. That was a really incredible match. That was a great one. Trying to think, there's been so many. Royce Isaacs versus Alex Coghlan. That was, and that had a lead up because they had a match in Bloodsport 4 or 5, and then culminated with a rematch in 6. That was a nice little payoff at the end of the day. Chris Dickinson was absolutely killer in Bloodsport and really started to shine. So, like his matches with Minoru Suzuki were really something.
Did you happen to catch any of when Monday Night Raw started doing their Raw Underground stuff? Did you happen to catch any of that? Did that
No,
make
I
you?
mean, look, as soon as it happened, everybody was blowing up my timeline and all
Right,
that kind
of
of
course.
stuff. But at the end of the day, what I always ended up saying was that no matter whether it be that or NXT Underground or TNA has done these matches, MLW is started doing them. Like, so everybody starts doing Bloodsport style matches. I just go, it just is advertising for us because at the end of the day, they don't have the special sauce, which is me. So without me, you don't get the same product. And it's weird to think of one vision being so important, but it's not just that I, Josh Barnett, am just the greatest thing that's ever walked. It's that I, Josh Barnett, have had the opportunity and experience to be training, wrestling with, friends with, learning from Antonio Inoki, trained by Billy Robinson, getting some training with Carl Gotch, then training and knowing people like Funaki and Suzuki, Fujiwara, and this list just can keep going, and I can just keep rattling off names and name dropping. But it is because I've had that opportunity to have these people influence me and show me these things and teach me that I can put together what is not the UWF, because that, despite, I know Zach Arnold, maybe somebody else thinks it's a possibility, but I just don't think that you can do UWF again, because you need a dojo system. People saw that as fully shoot MMA all the time, where it wasn't, but it wasn't not either. So there's plenty of shoots in the UWF organizations and all their offshoots, if you know what you're looking for. But instead, I instead of trying to do exactly what that might look like, I decided that what may actually be better, with MMA being so mainstream now, in a sense, or at least far more mainstream than, say, like 1991 and 89 and then 94, you know, these eras where shoot style wrestling was still around and still quite popular, was to add more of the pro wrestling element into it, but under the same construct of what we're trying to do with this match and how it needs to look, and how it needs to feel. So it's like, look, if someone's going to get hit with a Northern Lights bomb, you would normally think that that's something you just see in a pro wrestling match. But this is pro wrestling too, and all these things can be done if you know how to do it.
One cool thing I like about the blood sports is how much talent from literally everywhere you have. You got guys from NXT and girls from NXT, TNA, WWE, MLW, just AEW. It's amazing. So, like, what goes into trying to get all these guys and put together a card?
Yeah, you know, New Japan Pro Wrestling as well.
Yeah.
A lot goes into it, and I'm very thankful for what organizations are able to help me in this regard. And I think part of the reason this is really all possible is because, for one, Bloodsport is not a competition, even with Raw Underground. Like, we're not in competition with the WWE, and I'm not here to, you know, I can cut promos and do all that kind of stuff, but really, I'm not here to, like, critique their product, really, or theirs or anybody so much, unless, you know, really asked. And in a lot of those cases, I would much rather prefer to talk to the people there than to say it online. But Bloodsport is a wrestler's promotion. That's the thing that drives it, from that perspective. And the thing is, the wrestlers want to be there. Sometimes you see people on these cards, you wouldn't know it, but or it wouldn't be something you'd be aware of, but they had been reaching out to me to make this happen. Or when I was able to go through their office to talk to them and say, hey, we put this together, they're like, oh man, holy shit. I've been waiting for this. And, you know, they're off working in big ass companies already, you know, but there's something about what we do that makes wrestlers want to be there, you know. And I have people messaging me constantly to be on the show, but we don't do enough shows, and we have to be choosy, and we have to, you know, outside of, even if everybody was capable of doing it, that reaches out to me, if everybody was qualified, there's just not enough space to run enough shows and to keep the product in a state that I think is most beneficial for it than is possible. And then, of course, the real issue hits, and that is the qualified to do it. And there's not a lot of people that can do that. And that's what's really difficult, is you have to start from that and then move with what's left. But thankfully, there's a whole ton of talent out there still. Not always people that are available to me, but there are people out there that are more than capable. You know, it's like there's plenty of guys in Japan, but it's also not easy to get them over here. And if they're not going to resonate with the fan base enough to sell enough tickets to cover it all, it's like, ugh, God, I hate this part of it all. But but this is something that you need to take into account, because if your show isn't profitable, you have no show. And, you know, so far we've done quite well for ourselves, enough to keep going. And, you know, maybe if a few things could get sorted out, not really on the GCW side, but just the nature of indie wrestling in general, like, you know, the issue of pirating, the pirating of the product is so rampant. It's just, we've lost, I'd say we'd probably be sitting on over $100,000 or more if without pirating being an issue.
That's so crazy to me, because that Fight TV Triller Plus, like for $8 a month, and the amount of content GCW alone puts out, they got two shows this week and two shows next week. And like, you're paying like $1 a show. Like everyone, you pay more than that for a cup of coffee. Like it's crazy, man, that people are still pirating shit. It's such a sin.
I'm a guy that gets given a lot of shit for free. I'm not going to sit here and act like that's not the case. I end up, there's tons of concerts that I go to, and guess what? I buy merch, and I'll have people at the merch tables literally not allow me to spend money there. They're like, not good here. And I'm like, okay, you know, but I realized what it takes for a band to be on tour, for wrestlers to go out and work, for fighters to have training camps and all this. And you know, one of the rules I'm always stressing to even the people in the room with the fight team that we're associated with is, if you can't afford to buy a ticket to go watch your teammate fight, then you have your priorities all fucking wrong. If you can afford to go out drinking with your friends and buy cigarettes or smoke dope or do whatever, like all, if you can afford your vices, but you can't put aside a little bit of money to go support your teammates, your priorities are all wrong. Not to mention if your job is to compete, but you can't cover paying for your medicals to get your license, or you can't purchase a registration to go compete in a grappling tournament to stay fresh, then it's like, well, where are your priorities, you know? And for me, I try to put the money into the things that I support because I want them to exist. And I know how difficult and how hard it can be to make these sort of things, let alone really make them in any way that they can fully gain traction or have the support that they need to really to get bigger. Sometimes you need a bigger source of capital to build the infrastructure to actually get you to that next level. But it's like, well, how do I get it? It's like credit, right? You have no credit until you have a credit card, but you won't give you a credit card. You know, it's insane. But that is, you know, a reality with making things in the world, and building stuff is really difficult. And the pirating has been disappointing, to be honest, because, you know, just the other day I saw there's someone posted the whole Bloodsport 12 show on YouTube. Like, why would you do that? You know, what the fuck, man? I mean, it's not just like, oh, you're, you know, us rich promoters, me and Brett, you know, with his eight kids that he's got to pay for, you know, he's got to feed him and house him and all that, right? But no, we're not just sitting around just like swimming in money. It's like I try to explain to folks, if we had more budget, what I would do is start putting money aside, so we don't have to go from show to show, for what we do with Bloodsport, and think more of how do I make it so that I could actually contract people so that I can create storylines? Because how are you going to do a storyline if someone just might get picked up or whatever any at any given moment, and that shit's just done? Boom. Let's say you've been putting something together for 3 to 6 months, and now nope, that's all gone. They're off to AEW or WWE or whatever, and from our perspective, it's also like, well, man, that sucks for us, but we're not trying to ruin somebody's ability to go to the big time either, to go and make a career for themselves that's gonna potentially take care of them for the rest of their life. Because, you know, as much as I love what I do and I buy into it 100%, and I really believe that we do change lives, we don't change lives like a six-figure deal from WWE or AEW or someone like that. And we want people who are capable of finding themselves there to do so. And if we're able to be a part of that journey, we're happy about it. But it disappoints myself to see see stuff like we'll trend in the top 10 in the world on Twitter. And yet the numbers on streaming, you're like, that don't make no sense. You know, people are posting clips or doing this, but I'm like, that, you know, I every now and again, you'll come across someone who's showing you that they're on a Discord streaming it illegally. And they're like, and giving it away to people, like, thanks, you know.
It's a sin. It's a shame. It really is.
And I'm not, it's not just us. Like, if people are pirating other people's stuff, yeah. I mean, and if somebody did watch our stuff through pirating, but if they came back and bought merch and did this and did that, then, you know, you could say that it balanced out in some way. Because at the end of the day, more money to build the event means we could pay the wrestlers better. We could potentially put them on contract. We could do all kinds of things. We can bring in more talent. We could fly in more people. You know, we're really running really well and we're quite successful with it, but I am not the type of person that likes to sit there and be like, oh, you know, if we run 500 to 1,000 seat venues forever, I mean, that's cool. Now, I always want to do something like Bushido in Japan and have Sumo Hall. And I want to try and build the biggest things I can and make the coolest stuff possible. That's it. I want to make cool shit.
You're definitely making cool shit. You've stood in MMA rings with some of the best, and you've stood in wrestling rings with some of the best. Who's the hardest hitting in MMA, and who's the hardest hitting in pro wrestling?
Hardest hitting in MMA, I would say, is Mirko Krokop. Hardest hitting in pro wrestling? Well, I'll tell you what, you know, this last tag match I had in Noah, Fujita cracked me and my mouthpiece almost flew out of my mouth. So there is that. Hardest hitting in pro wrestling. Well, there's like Montanha Silva, who was 7 foot plus and 380 pounds. He definitely hit pretty damn hard, but I don't know, you know, if that was intentional or what, you know. Let me think, you know, I would say I've definitely gone in there and gone hardcore with some folks. Like, I had fights coming up, a fight after the end of a G1 tour where I was doing opening matches, and I faced Masahito Kakihara, and it was like straight out of UWFI. I mean, he came after me, cracked me right in the eye. Gave me a black eye for the rest of the tour. It's beautiful.
I have to ask, because there's, I work, you know, I work with younger kids and they're big. They love UFC. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, you guys have to find Pride. You have to find old Pride stuff because it's some of the best. What was that like for you? Because Pride was like otherworldly to me. I love old Pride fighting championships.
Me too. And I would say it was probably the greatest MMA experience there was. That's what I would say. Barring if I could have been like in rings in 1994 or 1990 or UWFI or something like that, or the original Pancras, King of Pancras tournament, you know. Pride was incredible. The biggest shows, the hottest crowds. It felt like, yeah, I would say that at the time, UFC felt like NASCAR and Pride felt like F1.
Yeah.
You know, both. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, people love to use NASCAR as like a pejorative, but NASCAR is incredibly heavy engineering tech-wise and innovation. The skills of the driver is unreal. And you have no idea what one of those cars is until you really even get just an understanding of how to build a car yourself, what racing cars is like. And then if you can sit there and talk to, like, you know, their mechanics and talk about head design and different stuff like that. Now, of course, they're not going to tell you a whole lot of it because that's their bread and butter. That's their secrets, but it's insane. Those cars now that you see in NASCAR run with a restrictor plate and they to reduce their top speed. If you took that small block V8 and ran it as as open as you could with the right kind of carburation or fuel injection, even if they, if it was allowed, that car will go over 200 miles an hour, no problem, and do it sustained. That's insane. Those motors are next level. So, so in any case, that's my way of saying that, you know, auto racing is nuts, but, and technology wise, like, man, it fucking blows you away. But, it feels like demographic wise, you know, F1 is like things that happen in Monaco, whereas NASCAR happens in South Carolina. So, you know, very different.
As a fan of MMA and pro wrestling, like to have Sakuraba on your Bushido show, like, is that another like holy shit moment? Because he was like, man, and those Pride days when he was that Gracie killer, goddamn. Mm-hmm. I love me some Sakuraba till he ran into Vandalay, but that's a whole, yeah, that's a whole another conversation.
Yeah, it was incredible, but it didn't start or stop there. For me, I remember there was a moment, the ring was up, but you know, show, we were still building out and doing stuff. And I'm just standing there looking at Sumo Hall and Yogoku and seeing the ring and seeing our logo on the screen and just going, this is a dream come true. And I used to sit there on plane rides and on the buses writing out my little cards that I would make and projects that I would like to do and whatever. I mean, sometimes this stuff came to fruition. So if you ever watch something called Lionsgate by New Japan Pro Wrestling, that was originally an idea I created. But my idea was originally to have young lions do MMA fights and other stuff like that, and for mid carders to headline, and for it to be a show to promote the younger talent and the guys that had not quite made it yet, and also give people a place where they could fight and do submission wrestling while they're young. And so winning and losing, you know, not just a big deal. They get an opportunity to stretch their legs while they're still, before they've really like created a real name for themselves where any of that could actually be at risk. And then a chance where guys who were having trouble getting out of that mid-card position could go and like, okay, here's your chance to shine, you know, show the world what you got. They didn't run with it. And then many years after I had been gone, all of a sudden Lionsgate, and I'm like, what? You know, and it is a show to showcase newer or younger talent and things of that nature. But yeah, that was just like, these are the things that I used to do because I ate, slept, and breathed pro wrestling and fighting. And, you know, I have other interests in my life now, too. But I still think quite a lot about this stuff. So doing Bloodsport Bushido was an absolute dream come true. And getting Sakuraba and Funaki and Suzuki, and having Akira Maeda, Kota Ibushi, and Fujiwara all there to support me. That's incredible. That was just beyond something I could have ever believed. And even in the process of taking meetings with GLAIT and New Japan and talking to people from Stardom and them backing us, supporting me, and sending their talent. That it said a lot about me, a foreigner, a gaijin. And I spoke to Kikira Maeda about this, and I said, has a foreigner ever come in here, created a Japanese company, and then did a show in Sumo Hall or something like that? And he goes, I don't think so. I don't think anybody's ever done that. And I, you know, maybe I am the first. I don't know. But it felt really unique. And I felt really honored that I could have that kind of respect with the people that mattered into making these things happen.
Well, hopefully this is the first of many trips back to Japan, because
Bushido
was an excellent show. I mean, all the blood sports are awesome. If you've never had a chance to check out the blood sport, GCW, Highest in the Room 3, December 14th, Triller Plus. You can sign up for a 7-day free trial. then it's $8 a month. GCW is putting out crazy content, but you're going to see our guest, the War Master, Josh Barnett, take on Royce Isaacs in a blood sport match. And if you're not familiar with the concept, this is the perfect time to check it out. And then Bloodsport runs a couple times a year, and they're loaded. The shows are loaded. They're super entertaining, and you never know who's going to show up. John Moxley showed up in Jersey City 2 weeks ago to back Marina Shafir, so that's huge coming off of Full Gear. And Josh is putting on unbelievable matches. He wrestled MVP at 12. He did Bad Dude Tito at 11. The list goes on and on.
Don't sleep on Bad Dude. That guy, he's incredible. Yeah.
He should be a superstar in New Japan. Superstar. Mm-hmm. It's a shame.
Since you guys are here, throw out some names. What do you want to see in Bloodsport?
Oh, man. I don't want to say somebody who has already been there, though.
Oh, that's okay.
I can't wait to see more of David Mansa.
Mazmanishvili?
Yeah, there we go. I'm glad you said it.
Yeah, everybody's like, David... M. David M. Yeah, the M guy. Yeah. Yes. I knew that obviously just looking at him was going to be like, okay, you got my attention. But as soon as people saw him actually move for real, they were going to be in a state of shock and awe.
Yeah. Him and Matt, just their match was amazing. And Matt, he put up a great fight too.
Matt's fantastic. Matt is one of the unsung heroes of this whole you could call it a federation or like program, but I have a really, really, really high opinion on Matt, and I could see really great things from him.
Yeah.
So there's two names. Mm-hmm. One, I don't know if it's even a possibility, but I would love to see Bryan Danielson. I know his career is in flux or whatever. And the other is just because his name went by the scroll before.
Yep.
Little Guido, because I know he is a badass motherfucker.
Yes.
I know he's a little older, but I think he could still stretch.
That's the trouble, is that he was a super badass shooter. And I didn't even gotten a chance to really hang out with him much. I would love to pick his brain. I was listening to him on the JBL and the podcast he does with Briscoe, and the stories were, I loved hearing his tales about getting into UWFI. They're fantastic. And James got to train under Billy Robinson as well. So we have that in common, but he said publicly online, people like hitting him up, but he goes, look, man, years ago, yes, totally. But at this point, I'm just, body's a bit too old. Been too long in the tooth, and I don't blame him, because this fighting and MMA and pro wrestling takes a lot out of you. And he was in ECW and then in WWE, and God, the amount of matches he must have had. And it's not for any. Yeah, I mean, look, if it was something that would feasible, then hell yeah, absolutely. But Bryan Danielson, yeah, 100%. I just don't think about throwing his name out there because I just feel like it's impossible. Right. But I hope that if he's going to retire, that I at least get a chance to meet him in the ring at least one time, because I've known him forever. We've done tours together. I've trained him in submission wrestling at times. Great guy, another Washingtonian.
So I have like two. One guy... You either love him or you hate him. Pretty polarizing. Had an amazing career in WWF. Former world champion, current TNA champion, Nick Nemeth. Has he done it yet? Or has
Wait,
he
are you asking me if Nick Nemeth has done Bloodsport?
All right, so I'm the most mainstream guy. I'm the most naive motherfucker on this.
Okay. All right. Yes, he has. You should go check his match out from Bloodsport 10.
10.
10. I think it was at WrestleMania week last week or last year.
All right, so scratch that. Let me shoot with this guy. I should have led with this guy. How about he probably did it too. Watch, Shelton Benjamin.
Would love to see it. Well, I have been in communication with him. Don't know if it's going to happen, but you never know. I mean, again, another person I have a high opinion of. Plus, me and Shelton have a connection not only through Bobby and MVP, but also through Minnesota wrestling. because I've got some guys that are from the Minnesota Storm that wrestled for the University of Minnesota that have trained with me and gone and competed in catch wrestling over in England. And, you know, I brought it up to Shelton and he's like, what, really? You got these guys going out there? Oh, that's cool, man. So, but yeah, go check out Nick Nemeth's match versus Speedball, I believe.
Oh, I'm such an asshole. I did know that.
I'll tell you, who's the kid? I got to look it up right now real fast.
Oh, I'm such an asshole.
The kid that worked GCW last weekend from England, Luke Jacobs.
Luke Jacobs, huh?
Luke Jacobs. He's I think he's like the Progress Wrestling Champion right now. Mm-hmm. He was impressive. He worked this past weekend in GCW. That's somebody I'd like to see in a blood sport.
Okay. Well, I'll have to take a look for him.
Yeah, he's the Progress World Champion right now.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
There it is.
So look, guys, we've been talking to Josh Barnett at Josh L. Barnett on X and Instagram. It's been scrolling across the bottom. If you want to support Josh, joshbarnett.com, you can get T-shirts, all sorts of great stuff there. He's got a link tree. I went on it. The heavy metal playlist, Josh, is fucking awesome. I'm a metalhead. I got Eddie tattoos on my leg. I got a giant Motorhead logo on the back of my leg. What is like a song that you would love to have as your walkout music that you haven't had a chance to use yet?
Oh, For All That May Bleed by Watain.
A little Watain. I like that. Mm-hmm. What are you doing, Nelly? Stop. The cats are crazy.
Apparently you got to give the cat, like if you're on a keyboard, you give the cat its own little keyboard and it'll, so you got to give it its own little desk for a podcast and it'll sit there and, but it might start meowing in the background. I don't know. Maybe it'll bring guests on, a raccoon, this squirrel from down the street.
She's a kitten. This is her first appearance. We've had her for months. This is the first time that she's ever jumped up on the desk.
First of many.
First of many. Absolutely. Highest in the Room 3, December 14th, the Ukraine Cultural Center, Los Angeles. It's a loaded show. If you can't be in Los Angeles, Triller TV Plus is $8 a month. Josh Royce Isaacs, Bloodsport, Matt Cardona, Effie. God, who else is on the card? Mance and Jimmy Broski against the Desperados. Matthew Justice, Dr. Redacted. It's a loaded show. Every GCW is loaded. Show is loaded. And then the People versus GCW on the 19th. Josh has a mystery opponent. We don't know who it is going to be. You never know who's going to show up in GCW. That's the beauty of it. And if you can't
Nick Nemeth.
Yeah, maybe Nick Nemeth again.
Maybe Nick Nemeth.
If you can't be in New York with Brundo and company, I mean, Triller TV again is a way to see it. Josh, this has been an absolute pleasure. I appreciate you responding to the DM and taking the time out of your Thursday night to join us.
I try to, although I could be really bad about with everything I got going on. I'm following up with people. There's plenty where I'm like, yeah, I'm down. And then it gets lost in the shuffle and then never happens. But, you know, I try to make my rounds.
Don't worry. You're not the only one that does that. So.
Josh, it's been a pleasure. Anytime you want to come back on the show, we'd love to have you shoot the shit to promote another blood.
And anybody that might be in Japan this weekend, I'll be there at Makuhari Mesa for Tokyo Comic Con. I'll be doing a special speaking engagement thing. And, you know, come see me. And while you're there, you can talk to Benedict Cumberbatch and Jason Momoa and a bunch of people with a lot of security.
So if you're there this weekend, what do you leave tonight or tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow.
How late tomorrow morning? Is that
for you? Yeah. And then my engagement's on the 8th. My talk show's on the 8th. And then, be rolling back here because I got Johnny Robles, one of my fighters, at Bantamweight. He's fighting the 13th. At Cage Warriors in San Diego. Then the day of the 14th, I'm at Dao Jiu Jitsu teaching a catch wrestling seminar up in Sun Valley, just, you know, LA area. And later that night, I roll my ass down to see what Royce Isaacs has to show me after he's gone on his little win streak, taking out two of the No Quarter Catch crew. He's feeling feeling pretty spry, feeling pretty strong, you know, and defeated his longtime rival, Tom Lawler, in a tag match. So he's riding high, man, and he's looking as strong as he's ever been, you know, physically and just his capabilities in the ring. So I guess I got to see what's different about him, see what's changed, and see if I could exploit the same weaknesses, or maybe I got to show him that I haven't shown him everything I know yet.
I mean, he's got the win streak, but so do you. Your last two fights you've won by TKO. I think he's only went a TKO and a regular win in his two fights. So,
okay.
You got to watch out. The warm up.
Well, you know, last time it was, you know, MVP was like, I ain't tapping out. So, I mean, out he goes with Tito. I had to drop him on his head and then kick him.
So yeah, Royce better, you know, I can't wait. I'm super duper excited for this. So, Josh, yeah, thank you so much again, man.
Oh, thank you guys.
Enjoy the rest. Oh God.
Enjoy the rest of your night.
Have a safe trip.
Take
Josh.
Care. Keep that cat hair out of your throat.
Josh, thank you so much, man. Nice, have a man. Great night. We'll talk soon.
All right.
Oh, man, he was awesome.
That was great.
KGG, what do you think?
Of what? Dick, of what?
The top guest? Five or?
Oh, top five? Easily.
Yeah. All right.
Easily.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed this. We'll be back Monday with a regular Shining Wizards Wrestling podcast with the full crew. Juice Springsteen's joining us. We're talking WCW. I guess that's it, man. Follow Josh Barnett on
with
all
the homework.
And the homework.
Yes.
And Brundo's homework. Don't forget that. Remember, follow Josh Barnett at Josh L. Barnett on X and Instagram. JoshBarnett.com is his website, and he's got a link tree on his Instagram, which will take you to all things that Josh Barnett is involved in. Thank you for those who hung out and watched. Special shout out to SJ. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, SJ.
I hope you had a great time. We appreciate you joining us. Scott George, nice to see you. Not so much on the Buck Zumhoff, but, you know, my question didn't get asked. I'm not even going to lie, SJ. I wasn't even paying attention to the comments here. I was running the banner, so my apologies. I'll take the hit for that. It's Double T's fault. We're back Monday with another jam-packed show. Remember to subscribe, rate, review if you enjoy the Shining Wizards podcast. Till then, I guess I got to do like I guess I got to play farting around, huh? Enjoy your weekend, watch all the wrestling, and continue to support the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast. Oh, this one. There we go. There's an outro.
Woohoo! All right. So should I hit the button? What did I do? Good night, everyone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not doing it. It's not a proper show. I'm not doing it.
All right, hit the button.
Hit it.
All right, it's on. There's like two buttons now.